The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today, we are joined by Tony Rook. He's an activist and filmmaker in the UK. He's been on the show before to talk about numerous outreaches and efforts, including his battle with the BBC over the TV tax a few years ago. We'll be getting an update on what happened with that, but he's got a new effort that he's going to be talking about today as well. I'm excited to hear more about it. Tony, welcome back to 9/11 Freefall.
Hi, Andy.
Let's just revisit a few years ago, because we're always picking up new listeners. There may be people that have no clue about what happened between you and the BBC. So can you briefly tell our audience about that and tell us how did that whole matter end?
Okay. Well, in England, if you own a television, you have to have a television license. And it's a tax, and the money goes to the BBC, only the BBC. But if you own a television, you have to have one by law. And if you don't have one, you can get in trouble. I refused to pay for one after I come to understand the circumstances surrounding the collapse of Building 7 on 9/11, which many of us now know. The BBC broadcast the collapse of that building twice, 23 minutes and then a bit before, they said that the building had gone down when it actually hadn't. And there was a live broadcast from BBC News on the day of the reporter telling us the building had gone down. And she was actually stood in front of it in the window. The reporter's name was Jane Stanley. I had a knock on my door one day, and TV licensing, a company called Capita, who are a contracted company for the BBC, go around collecting license fee money, said, well, you haven't paid. I said, well, no, I'm not going to pay, because I had actually written to the BBC in 2006 and said, look, I can't pay you until you tell me who gave you the original information, because this is suspicious. They never told me. And so long story short, Andy, we ended up in a courtroom, and I stood in front of a judge. I gave him all the information I had on Building 7, and the conclusion was that the judge refused to tell me to buy a TV license. He didn't fine me a penny, which was unusual because I hadn't had a TV license for 7 years. And even the prosecuting lawyer donated towards my court costs, which he told me would be minimal. But because I pled guilty, I was always going to be found guilty. But he actually donated to my court costs. So that was the upshot of that particular case. The legal principle I was using was Section 15 of the Terrorism Act 2000, which is a piece of British legislation that says if you contribute to furthering the purposes of terrorism, that is a serious offence. And so I said, okay, well, I think the BBC are furthering the purposes of terrorism by covering up the true events. I'm not going to pay them. And that was basically it, really.
You know, I wish I had followed up on that sooner, because that sounds like a victory to me. I mean, the fact that the judge was so lenient, the fact that you had the prosecutor contributing to your fund there, I mean, that sounds like a very bold stand that went very far. So congratulations on that. I consider that a victory for the truth movement.
Yeah, I mean, it was some people may call it a Pyrrhic victory or a moral victory, but to this day I have no conviction for not having a TV license, and I still don't have one. I actually asked the judge in court, do you want me to buy one, because if you do, I'm going to be committing an offense. And he said, I've said all I've got to say, and left the room. So I wasn't even told to buy one. The evidence is that good. And you have to bear in mind, Andy, this is, crikey, when did, this is 2013, and so we now have the University of Alaska report from Fairbanks, Professor Halsey and co, and you know, a lot more information than we had at the time. Had I had that, then I may have got a better result. I don't know.
Well, the tide is rising on all of these people. I mean, even if the media and the Western world, Europe and America, are still the same sock puppets that they were 10 years ago, I mean, people are seeing through it now more and more. Things like what you just cited, the World Trade Center 7 study out of University of Alaska Fairbanks, are putting the nail in the coffin on the official story, and the only thing that is holding it up is a corrupt system. But that can't last forever either. Once everybody gets educated and wakes up to this, then it's just a matter of time before the dam breaks. And we're seeing it in so many different ways now, not just with 9/11, but other things that are going on in the world. Now, I want to say this to the audience. I wanted to verify this fact while Tony was talking, and I mentioned this to you, Tony, before we started recording. July 1846, Henry David Thoreau had been resisting the payment of poll taxes that helped fund the Mexican-American War for 6 years. He was arrested for refusing to pay and spent a night in jail, according to Google. So this is actually a very good and effective kind of protest. It is a moral victory, but when people hear about it, they hear about the stance, it does send a message out to everybody that is touched by it. So you stand in good company, Tony.
Yeah. Well. Funny enough, you know, as we, like you say, we were talking before we came on air. What I'm currently protesting against is the what we call the council tax, but it was called the poll tax before that. So same thing, you know, Mr. Thoreau was doing, which is a local tax whereby you pay your police, you pay for your garbage collection, you pay for your street lighting, you pay. It's a very kind of localized tax. But that said, it still goes towards central government. And I demanded all the figures off my local council, which they weren't very happy about because it took them days to collate, and said, well, where does my money go? And sure enough, you know, a lot of your money goes to central government. And even if it didn't, it doesn't matter. And they tried to argue around that. They said, oh, no, your personal tax, Mr. Rook, only goes towards the local council. It does not go to the Ministry of Defense, for example, which I would certainly object to because I object against the wars in the Middle East and things like that. But that's a very easy legal argument to get around, because I said, well, does it pay for your employees? And he said, well, yes, it does. And I said, well, they pay income tax, which does go to central government, and et cetera, et cetera. So they really don't have a legal leg to stand on. And so that's the case that I've got coming up in, I don't know, well, it was meant to be before the lockdown, but it's been held up. So we don't know when it's actually going to occur. But also, of course, when I pay my local taxes, that goes to our local police. Now, I reported my 9/11 findings, my 7/7 findings, and various other evidences I would posit suggest false flag terrorism to my local police some time ago, and they've done absolutely nothing. So technically, they are furthering the purposes of terrorism by doing absolutely nothing, so I can't fund them either. It's a horrible little game of verbal pinball that you get involved with your local council when you do this. But you know, the principle remains the same. Do you want to pay for this crap, or do you not want to pay for this crap? And I don't want to pay for it.
And that is exactly what we're talking about today. So just to clarify for the audience, and Tony, feel free to correct me if I get any part of this wrong, but do you have a local tax that goes to supposedly the local council, pay for services around the neighborhood, but they have employees that pay an income tax to the central government. I don't know if you call them federal over there, but basically the top, the equivalent of our federal government. And they pay an income tax to that government. It's involved in terrible activities, including the cover-up of September 11th. You've reported to the police as well the evidence of controlled demolition at the towers on 9/11. They've done nothing, so in a way, this is supporting terrorism when you look the other way and let this stuff go on. So you are refusing to pay based on that moral stance. when did you start to get heat about not paying this?
Well, I never really got heat for it. I mean, my wife, bless her, is Indonesian, and she has, well, she does have an interest in what I do, because when I made a documentary called Incontrovertible, so we had to go to the States, and I needed someone to help me lug all my film gear around, so I took the wife with me. And so she inevitably is interested in it, because we met people like Richard Gage and Cynthia McKinney, etc. So she's, but she doesn't understand the finer points of the law, if you like, and looks at me a little bit bewildered. But when I started to, it really hit home, and I mean home, when I said, right, we're not going to pay this anymore, because she would always have me pay it. She said, no, you've got to pay the council tax. I said, no, I don't have to pay the council tax. And so I just stopped it from our account, and said to the chief solicitor, the chief lawyer, our local council, look, I'm stopping it. You're going to have to take me to court, because that's what they do. But can I have a judge? Because what would normally happen, Andy, is that in England we have a magistrate system, where you'll turn up in court for a lesser crime like not paying your council tax, and you'll be confronted by three people on a bench in the courtroom who are not even legally trained. You know, they might be a local florist, they might be, they're all quote unquote upstanding citizens of the community. But they're not really, in my opinion, they're just social climbers, but they have no legal training. So I, because of my objection was so technical and based on international war law and terrorism law, I managed to convince my chief solicitor, who was prosecuting me, listen, I need a judge for this. And so I've got a judge. When I go to court, I will have a judge who is legally trained. So he is obliged to look at all the international law and all the intricacies of the law, which are quite good. We had some major changes in British law in 2018, especially on reasonable cause, which is a very, very, very important phrase in law. If you have reasonable cause to believe that your next door neighbor murdered your wife, reasonable cause is very important. You know, you have to have reasons for that. But they've now lessened that, actually, just have suspicion, interestingly enough. Of course, it was on a terrorist case, all in their favor. But I'm using that and a few other things that have cropped up. The Alaskan University report, of course. So, yeah, I'm preparing the case at the moment. It's a bit of a headache.
Those judges must love seeing you come.
Well, I've only seen the one. The solicitor, the lawyers don't like me, but but if you bombard them with enough stuff, and I've been bombarding it. Listen, Andy, it's all a matter of who you get. You know, you can get very lucky or very unlucky. For years, I did the same thing. I've been doing it since 2005, 2006, and there was this horrible woman at the local council. And we would have stand-up rows in the office there, and she said, "Oh, why don't you f off and, you know, make a movie of yourself?" And so I did, and then even after that, she wasn't having any of it. And then she retired, thank goodness. And then somebody replaced her, who's actually far more amenable and far more open-minded. And so we'll see. But they've been nice to me so far. But if you stand up in front of a rotten judge, and I have had friends who've done this, then, you know, they can turn around and say things like, oh, it's vexatious and frivolous litigation, which is one of their favorite phrases, which is basically a coverall. It's the nine-year-old child's equivalent of sticking your fingers in your ears. Do you know what I mean? They just won't listen to you at all. And so no legal argument is valid at all, because they just say it's strict liability, because in law, your income tax, your TV license even, and I'm sure this is the same in America as far as taxes is concerned, is what they call strict liability. There is no argument around it. Well, that's not true. And I actually managed to get a letter, thank goodness, from the Home Office, which are the government themselves, the ultimate source of legality in England, who said, no, you would not have to pay income tax if there was clear and necessary implication, and this is their phrase, clear and necessary implication that the government were actually furthering the purposes of terrorism. Now, you know, a lot of people turn around to me and say, oh, why do you bother? Because 9/11 was an American attack. It wasn't a British-based act of crime. Well, hang on a minute. Well, 67 Brits died on 9/11 to start with. Also, in October of 2001, Tony Blair made a very articulate speech, which is well documented in the newspapers and Hansard, the British political record, saying because of 9/11, we're going to go marching into the Middle East. So there is a direct connect between 9/11 and British taxation, because we paid for the wars. You know, every British citizen has paid around £2,000 per household since 9/11. So, you know, it's a lot of money. You know, I don't want to blow $2,000 on killing children in the Middle East and things like that.
Yeah, obviously, because 9/11 was an event that affected the entire world. I mean, the world stopped on that day and the world changed on that day. It's not just an American issue. It is something that at least the Western world that followed the United States into the wars, followed them into Iraq, which had nothing to do with September 11th, even if you believe the official story. So to say that it was just an American thing and that you shouldn't be taking a stand on this is absolutely ridiculous. Now, you've said that you've talked to a member of the local council, I believe you said, and you told them that you're not doing this. How soon before you think you will start to feel heat from this protest? When do you think they're going to come knocking on your door or start calling you into court?
Well, that's a good question. I do keep in touch with them and write to them and ask. I was meant to be in court before the lockdown, which I don't know about the States, it happened here in March. And I was due in court around about the end of February. But I did actually write to the court and say, look, can you just postpone this? Because I needed to get in touch with the barristers of the London bombings case, John Hill. I don't know if you're familiar with the documentary 7/7 Ripple Effect, which John Hill made about the London bombings. And poor old John was hauled into court by the authorities because he'd sent this film to a judge and jury, a trial linked to the London bombings. Obviously, the London bombers were they're all dead. I mean, how they managed to die is another question, but they're all dead. But John Hill made a very, very good film called 7/7 Ripple Effect, questioning the official narrative, much in the same way as Loose Change or something like that, maybe. And he got put in prison for 150 days, put on trial. They showed his film to a jury. He was accused of perverting the course of justice by sending this film to a judge and jury. And the jury at his trial, at John's trial, turned around and said, no, you're not guilty. That's fair comment, what you said. So a movie that said that the London bombings were an inside job has been viewed by a jury and found to be fair comment. So that's another example of reasonable cause for me to doubt the official version of the London bombings. And so this information has also been sent to my local council. So that's also forming part of my argument, and a few other cases as well, not just 9/11, by the way, because one has to establish reasonable cause.
You know, to me, we're talking about the lockdown now and what's going on with the supposed pandemic taking place around the world. But to me, the lockdown started after September 11th. It was slow. It came in incrementally. But we see how they try to lock down the narrative. They try to lock down people's ability to communicate, share their ideas, share their thoughts on major events. We see the internet being locked down as it becomes harder and harder to find information, at least on Google. I know some ways around it. Maybe I'll get into that on another show. But I can still find some old stuff. But it is harder for the average person who doesn't know tricks and sites to find it. And the lockdown is just going into hyperdrive now with what is happening. Now it's starting to affect our physical presence here in this world, not just our virtual and mental abilities to get information out. So, no, I think this is all so important. It is important to stand up when you think you can, in a way that you think is best for you. For somebody out there, kind of protest like this may not be the best option for them, for whatever circumstances they're in, but for Tony it is. But if you have a way to protest, even if it's a quiet way, even if it's a way that other people don't know you're protesting, but it's having an impact and you know it, then do it. I think that we need to withdraw all support from the system that keeps on perpetuating these lies and turning the people of nations all over the world into the criminals, classifying them as being some kind of potential threat, whether it's a potential threat of supporting terrorism by talking about physics and common sense, or the kind of threats that people are being turned into now for just breathing and existing. So we need to resist that, because it doesn't stop, folks. You keep on redrawing that line, pretty soon you are backed into a corner. So you got to start speaking out, whether it be about 9/11 or other issues going on that you don't agree with, you don't agree with the official stories of. So let's talk about your film really quick, because I know that you worked hard on that back when that came out, and you have a company called Killing Anti Productions, right? Talk about that and the work you do.
Well, Incontrovertible was a crowdfunded film, and we were very fortunate. I mean, it kind of rode on the wave of the BBC thing, if you like, because you know you're famous for 15 minutes. That was the thing, and the BBC case did garner some attention. And so I said I'd like to make, because my background was in sort of television and things anyway, so make a film about it and expand upon the evidence that I used in the court case. And so we raised a little bit of money, about 30-odd grand English, and was able to take Matt Campbell, a mate of mine who lost his brother, sadly, on 9/11. And we went to the States and made the movie, and it did pretty well. That was very gratifying to be able to do that. I met some wonderful people, Cynthia McKinney, Judge Ferdinando Imposimato, is no longer with us, sadly, and some wonderful cops in America, and people like Dale Pierce, you know, Rudy Dent, Mary Ravel, all, you know, big 9/11 truthers, very, very interesting people. But that was, you know, looking back on it, it was only 5 years ago, but looking back on it, it feels like the early days now. We didn't have the Alaska report. That would have been great, but I know Dylan Avery's, you know, going to do a great job on the new film that's coming out shortly. So that should be very exciting. It's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, you must feel the same way, Andy. You know, our lives were tripped up, you know, 19 years ago. I wouldn't never imagined I'd be sitting here talking to you about something like that happened then. All I wanted to do, to be quite honest, was write musicals. that was my plan for life.
Yeah, mine was to be a cartoonist, you know, make somebody laugh once a day.
Yeah, I just wanted to write show tunes, you know.
Yeah, you know, so our lives took a completely different turn. I know, isn't it amazing to think that, like, just for me personally, I went to bed the night before, I fell asleep to Monday Night Football between the Broncos and the Giants, and the next morning something happened that was going to alter the direction of my life, and it happened for you and everybody else, and it's just amazing that something, one thing that happens in some part of the world can touch so many people. And I'm, you know, not just the stuff that's acknowledged with the people who died and the wars that followed, but the 9/11 truth movement, because obviously it's affected us as well.
Oh, big time, man. Big time. I was looking at something the other day, and this happened in the Second World War. You know, there was a Polish chap, I can't remember his name now for the life of me, but he actually wrote a book about it, and he called it, they coined it as ponerology. It came from a Greek god, ponos, or something to do with evil. And there is actually a study of evil within politics. It's called ponerology. And that's what we've got now. I mean, I think you get to a certain stage where you say, oh, why would they do that? Why would they do this? Why would they do that? I'm a Christian, personally. I don't know, people think you're mad for being a Christian. But I think, you know, we're looking at what's happening now with COVID and the restrictions, and they want to vaccinate everybody with this thing that's got no long-term testing. I mean, it just makes no sense for a mortality rate of less than 0.5%. You see, this is just evil. It just is evil. There is no other word to explain it, be you theologically inclined or not. And there is no real understanding of it. That's the frustrating thing I find with it. It just goes on and on and on and on. But, you know, it's beatable. It's beatable, I think.
I think these people are going to undo themselves, because that is what happens throughout human history. It doesn't mean they're not going to do a lot of damage on their way down. What scares me is how much of the public goes along with the mind control. Not just going along with it, but gets rabidly behind it, where they want to start turning on people who don't necessarily agree or want to comply. You know, that goes off into a whole other issue revolving around current events. But I think what's going on now is a direct result of the failure of society to do anything about issues like 9/11. Again, you keep on redrawing that line, pretty soon you're up against the wall. We have to make a stand. I just want to see things return to normalcy. I mean, I've said on the show, I don't have any particular ism I'm trying to promote or any ideology. I just want to see common sense reign, and I want to see everybody's lives go back to peaceful, unexciting, humdrum, but they're living their own lives and having fun with it and enjoying their time on planet Earth, not worrying about every crisis that TV creates for them and now is affecting them in their homes.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you want to go back and watch the Broncos playing the Giants, and I want to go back to watching Arsenal play Tottenham. It's very difficult. I mean, I when I say that I want to go back to, I mean pre-9/11. I'm not saying there wasn't bad stuff before 9/11. We know that with Operation Northwoods in 62 and Lord knows what else. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to come to a head. And I think, it's going to be one or the other. I hope people aren't stupid enough to take the vaccine. I mean, in England, we have a company doing it called AstraZeneca. We're a British-based pharmaceutical company, and they are shockingly awful. Their track record is abysmal and criminal, and they've been fined $1.5 billion and killed lots of children. And but that's no big news, you know. Look at Bill Gates and his polio vaccine. But it's scary, and one can hope that you and I are just not talking to the converted here. That, you know, there's one or two people listening, you may think, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, I think a lot of people, once they roll up their sleeves, Andy, and they actually have that little bit of steel pointed into their vein, I think they might think twice. I think that's going to be one of those Conradian moments, when they have this great moment of clarity and think, hang on a minute, and maybe they'll slip off the chair and, no, I don't want this, thank you very much.
Well, there you go. That's the purpose of the show. Get some steel in your veins and listen to me for just a moment. If you have any doubts about this whatsoever, if you have doubts about 9/11, you shouldn't be trusting anything that you hear from them. You should think for yourself and figure out ways, even if you can't make a big, bold stand because of your circumstance, maybe you have kids, there's secret ways, quiet ways to get around them, just to protect yourself and the people that you care about. Tony, the half an hour has gone by so quickly. Good luck with your protest and your court case, and thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Free Fall today.
Thanks for having me, Andy. Nice to talk to you again.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Say have a great week. Good luck. We'll